Welcome to another Distinct Nostalgia by MIM.
Brought to you in partnership with the Life Rooms and Mersey Care NHS Foundation Trust. Staying well, staying home.
And this time we're meeting an actor who became known for the voices she created for some of the most memorable cartoon characters of all time. MIM's Ashley Byrne has been talking to prolific voice actor Kathy Gorey, but who's her most famous creation? Is it Sarge? No. Henry, the mild-mannered janitor? No. Maybe. Rosemary, the telephone operator? Could be. Enjoy.
Let's go back in time to the sort of early 1970s, as it were, and tell me where you first heard about Hong Kong Phooey. When did somebody sort of whisper that into your ear and make you aware of it?
Well, I had been doing voice work for Hanna-Barbera. I had played the animated Gidget in an animated feature that they did. And so I got a call one day to go to the Hanna-Barbera studios and audition for a new show. And when I got over there, the show was Hong Kong Phooey. And I was cast as Rosemary the cop, because I didn't know exactly how they wanted the character played. So I just kind of went full bore on. And I didn't know at the time what Rosemary was going to look like because they hadn't showed me a picture. So I started out with, hello, hello, you know, and I got the job. Let's put it that way. And I met all my fellow cast members. And it was very interesting doing that show.
So you were a cop originally, not a telephone operator, is that right? Or was she a cop as well?
Well, they referred to her as a lady cop, and she was the switchboard operator, and she wore a police uniform, and she had a big crush on the dog janitor Hong Kong Phooey, which never even crossed my mind as, like, what, this is cross-species romance. Okay, that sounds good.
Nobody would think of it in a dreadful way then, would they? I mean, these were more innocent times, weren't they?
It was very innocent times, and I was very innocent. I was probably, like, 21 or 22 years old. I was a kid when I started doing voice work. I was about 18, or maybe I even started actually at the age of 17. And so a lot of this stuff flew right over my head. I had come out of convent school and went into sort of Hong Kong Phooey.
It was a play really on the obsession of the time, wasn't it? Kung Fu. And
yes, Kung Fu fighting, all the Bruce Lee movies. There was a hit song called Kung Fu Fighting, which I used to play on the radio in Los Angeles. And so it was, yes, and it was that show with David Carradine, you know, hello, grasshopper, that kind of deal. And so everybody was obsessed with Kung Fu. Personally, when I saw the script, a lot of it flew over my head, but I thought, this is nuts. What is this? And I gotta say that it was quite shocking to find out that show has such a long lifespan. People love that show.
Indeed. So tell us, you got the script, and what happened then? You decided to go ahead with it, and tell us how you got to know everybody and how it all panned out.
I got to know everyone, and I was the baby. I mean, I was probably, like I said, 21, 22 years old, and I'm working with Joey Ross, who I remembered seeing as a kid on Sergeant Bilko, and Scatman Crothers, who used to come in and bring his ukulele, who was, these guys all seemed like they were a million years old to me. And Dawes Butler, one of the great figures in animation, who did all the Flintstones and all that other stuff. And here, I'm just this baby, you know, and these guys were raunchy. Joey Ross and Scatman were so raunchy. They used to do stuff that my jaw would be on the floor. It's like, what? What are you guys doing? What are you talking about? You know, and Joey Ross at the time was probably, gee, I don't know. He must have been in his, everyone, he seems old to you when one is like 21, 22 years old. He probably was in his 60s. I have no idea, but he was married to a girl my age, who was an ex-stripper, okay? So she would come to the sessions, and it was very strange.
But you had to build a chemistry quite quickly.
Oh, yes, right. And I thought the way that really cement ties with these guys was to bring Italian cookies. So I made Italian cookies since I'm Italian, and I would bring them to this recording sessions, and basically you could bounce them off the walls. I wasn't a very good baker at the time, but they all took the cookies and, you know, I think they had fun kind of screwing around with me and my naivete, but, you know, we all got along really well.
But Rosemary, the telephone operator, wasn't meant to be your age, was she? She was a bit older than you, wasn't she?
Oh, yeah. And I think someone told me years later that the design of Rosemary, which wasn't your typical Hanna-Barbera character, was done by, I think, a cartoonist from Playboy, who used to do, I believe he did Little Annie Fanny. I mean, because she was built. And I meet men in their 30s now. In fact, I think I believe it was the deputy editor of The Guardian, who I met on Twitter, who was introduced to me by a mutual friend who grew up watching that. And he was going, "Oh my God, Rosemary, it's Rosemary." And it's like, wow, I had an effect on a bunch of Gen Xers. Maybe I was their first female crush or something, but I meet men all the time in all sorts of walks of life, some of them quite powerful now, who grew up in their, you know, nappies sitting on the rug watching me, you know, watching Rosemary, rather, and just kind of forming opinions about things.
Indeed. So how did you have much choice in how you were going to make Rosemary sound? I mean, you were obviously given some direction on that, I presume.
They let me do whatever I wanted to do. I was pretty much very known to Hanna-Barbera. I did a lot of voice work, a lot of commercials. I had won a Clio Award at the time, which was best commercial. And so they let me do pretty much what I wanted to do. And that's what I thought Rosemary would sound like.
and she, you know, I mean, the series didn't last long, does it? It wasn't that many episodes of Hong Kong.
No, we didn't even get two seasons, because I'm doing this thing. Okay. Now I went to an all girls school. It was pretty politically correct. And I'm looking at this thing, I'm thinking, this is strange. This show is really strange. And for the first couple of years after I did it, it was almost like, ooh, I did that. That's a little embarrassing. And then I started to see how popular it was. And it has had a life of its own. And in fact, at one point, a couple of years ago, I mean, I'm a screenwriter now, I write with my husband, and Warner Brothers was planning a Hong Kong Phooey film with Eddie Murphy. And our agent represents the man they had hired to direct it. So I heard from him saying, oh, we may want to talk to you and we may have you come and do something when we do this film. And I thought, okay, we'll see if this goes anywhere. And it didn't. But people have talked about it constantly, about reviving Hong Kong Phooey, making an animated feature out of it.
It's amazing, isn't it? Very few episodes, and it's had such an impact for such a long time.
Exactly. And I think there's a ska band called Limehouse who actually recorded Hong Kong Phooey a few years ago. I think it might be a British band. I've heard the song. You know, I mean, I did so many other things that are still on and that people still talk about and they write me about and stuff. I hear from them on Twitter, on through email and stuff. Hong Kong Phooey is the one, you know, that everybody goes, oh, I remember Hong Kong Phooey, you know, say hello to me. It's like nuts. It's crazy.
You'll always be the telephone operator, Rosemary.
Yeah, I will. And I'll tell you, if you go into some of the weirder online websites, people have a whole other appreciation of Rosemary that quite often involves blindfolds, whips, and chains, okay? So I don't know how she kind of transmogrified from hello to this, but she's quite the fetish object.
She was an important part of the show, though, wasn't she? She was a linchpin to the program.
She was, because she would be rescued. She would be always following Hong Kong around, and she was crazy for Hong Kong Phooey. And I would think to myself, this is a dog in a kimono. I'm a person. I'm supposed to be a person, and she's in love with a dog in a kimono. But all right.
We'll be back after a quick break.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game. Yeah. Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man.
Y'all
trying,
already?
Oh, yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying to get them on there. Yeah. Look, we all artists, man. You feel me? We going to have this like,
bro, me and my man Kyle, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now. I got to lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit serious.
It's bizarre, isn't it? So go on then. I mean, everyone's asked you to do Rosemary. Can you do Rosemary for us?
Hello, hello. Oh, Hong Kong Fooey. Everything was always rhyming. So you call the police department or Hong Kong Fooey, I would tell, oh, Hong Kong, oh. That kind of deal. That
Excellent.
Kind of thing.
And what was her relationship supposed to be like with the policeman, the head policeman? What was her relationship?
Rosemary seemed to only have eyes for Hong Kong. None of the human people on the show counted. And, you know, it was fun because we would get in there at around 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning on recording days, and we would just be there all day recording the show. And after a bit, they did show us what our characters looked like, but that was after we started doing the voices. And it was fun. We'd have a great time. We would do the stuff. We would go out to lunch. We would have snacks. We would kid around. Then they would discipline us and say, okay, get back in front of the microphones again. And, you know, it was a really fun environment because both Hannah and Barbera were alive at the time. They were there. And when I first got hired at Hanna-Barbera, Joe Barbera took me all around to everybody, all the animators, everybody at the studio, and introduced me because I was Italian and he was Italian. And I got to meet everybody, and I don't remember anybody, but, you know.
And did you build on any experience of your own in terms of the way you'd listen to people who, you know, telephone operate in other walks of life, you know, because there is a certain type of person, isn't there?
Sort of, but not really. I've been doing voices sort of even from when I was 15, 16 years old. And I used to call in the local radio station in San Francisco when I was about 15 or 16 and tease the disc jockeys and do voices and play characters. And so they were intrigued because I could mimic people. So they started calling. I would be putting my uniform on, getting ready to go to school. And my mother would get a phone call and it would be one of the DJs on the air saying, Queen Elizabeth's coming to the U.S. Can Kathy do the Queen? Put Kathy on the phone and see if she can do the Queen. And then I would, in my little school uniform before I left, would, you know, hello, and I would do the Queen, and then I would go off to school. And that's how I started doing that. And then as soon as I graduated, and even before I started college, they offered me a job on the radio, doing all of these, you know, doing the morning show with my co-host, who is a very experienced guy, and playing characters. And, you know, I would write bits and I would write characters. And so I had a lot of experience doing all kinds of voices. Then I got hired to work on the first season of Sesame Street, singing and doing characters. And I was in Your Good Man Charlie Brown, the stage play, for about 2 years when I got out of school, playing Peppermint Patty. And that's a whole other set of voices. So I had a lot of voice experience, and I was just looking for something that would be funny. I was playing her to be funny.
Do you think if you'd seen originally, the images of the way Rosemary was going to look, do you think you'd have played her in the same way?
I might have. I might have made her a little more, you know, I don't know. I might have made her a little more seductive instead of so brassy. But I guess it's the combination of brassy and big gazongas and a short, tight skirt that made her so appealing for all these years.
And everyone remembers the theme tune, don't they? The theme tune was classic, wasn't it?
Hong Kong Fooey, number one super guy. Thanks for the earworm.
This is Distinct Nostalgia by MIM, proudly supporting Acting for Others. On Sunday, the 5th of April, Engine Shed and Something for the Weekend present the Dad's Army Radio Show on air, the Homefront Edition, and all through Facebook.
Right and down. Return. Return attention.
Really, Mr. Banbrigg, my parishioners haven't seen onions for a month. David Benson and Jack Lane star in a special recording of the last episode, Never Too Old.
Excuse me, sir. You think I might be excused?
Mr. Manning, you've got nothing to worry about.
Keep calm. We've got to keep calm. Don't panic. Don't panic!
The Dad's Army Radio Show, on air. The Homefront Edition. Sunday, the 5th of April, 2020, from 7:30 p.m. Streaming and available for 24 hours at facebook.com/Dad's Army Radio. Please donate to Acting for Others online at bit.ly/Dad's Army Radio. Acting for Others provides financial and emotional support to all theatre workers in times of need through 14 member charities. Actingforothers.co.uk.
Hong Kong Fooey is the thing that it seems that everyone remembers you for in terms of Rosemary, the telephone operator. But as you said, you've done all sorts of other things, and you were Laurie in Inch High Private High as well.
Right. And I was Katie in Valley of the Dinosaurs. And the interesting thing is, in those days, people didn't think about the value of animation cells. You know, and they've become quite collector's items. The old Disney animation cells from the old classic animated films are worth a lot of money. And now the Hanna-Barbera animated cells. And so we were given animated cells of our characters. That's what they started doing at a certain point. So I had them rolled up in tubes in a box somewhere. And I have carried these tubes around with me for a number of years. And we bought a new house last year, and we had a lot of boxes in the garage, a lot of stuff we just didn't get to. And we bought a new car. And even though our garage is designed for more than one car, for two cars, half of it was boxes, and half of it we had to clear a space for this SUV we bought. So in clearing the boxes, finally, after being in this house for a year, my husband found the tube that had animated cells of Katie from Valley of the Dinosaurs and animated cells. There probably are some Hong Kong Fooey things in there, too. But really, I remember seeing Valley of the Dinosaurs, which was a riff on Land of the Lost, I guess, which was popular at the time.
Indeed. On Inch High Private Eye, you played, you were another pretty big part in Inch High Private Eye, weren't you? You were one of the main...
I was the human-sized person, because my uncle Inch High was an Inch High. And he was played by Lenny Weinrib, who I was dating at the time. I started dating him because we were working together. He was about a zillion years older than me. In fact, he was like 22 years older than me. But we dated for a while, and we had a lot of fun. And then the guy that played the young assistant to Inch High was a very interesting fellow, because he told me, unless he was screwing around with me, he told me that he was the nephew or the great nephew of Lucky Luciano, the gangster. So I thought, okay, that's interesting. The Hanna-Barbera was filled with strange. The one thing that I'm sorry that I did not do is I missed two gigs with Hanna-Barbera. I auditioned for Scooby-Doo and didn't get it. And I also did not get one of the Smurf characters. So had I done Scooby-Doo and the Smurfs, that would have been pretty...
Well, both of those were long-running shows, weren't they? Because Inch High Private Eye, again, was only 13 episodes, wasn't it? One series.
Right. I was the queen of the, like, one-season series. Inch High... Well, the one that did last was the new Tom and Jerry. And I constantly hear from people. We did a lot of the new Tom and Jerry. They revived Tom and Jerry in the... I guess it was around 1975 or 76, and I did that. And in that, I was not playing Tom or Jerry. I played a lot of everybody else. All these other it was like a million characters. I would go in and I might be doing three or four different people per episode.
You've been working, as you say, in voiceover and doing animation films and various other things like this all your life for a very long time. Looking back, what was that period in the 70s, the sort of the heyday, the time that you enjoyed most, or have you are there other moments that...
Yes, you know, the 70s were really great, and the animation was great because I had the pleasure of working with some of the great radio actors of the golden days of radio. I worked with people who had been on the radio and had been big radio stars in the 30s and the 40s. They're all gone now because they're all you know, if they were alive, they'd be 120 years old or something. But that was great to be able to work with people who had worked with Jack Benny and work with people who had worked with Burns and Allen and all the great comedians. And these people were wonderful. And then what happened was animation changed greatly around, I don't know whether it was in the 80s or the 90s. I was already writing at that point, not doing animation anymore. But they started, movie stars and television stars started to say, well, we want to do animation. So it went from a business where you had old radio stars, and they were legit people who had stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and they were very well known. They started to die out. And instead of the younger voice people taking over the lead roles, a lot of those lead roles got tapped from people like Robin Williams. I mean, any big movie star who wanted to do animation would do animation. And it became sort of a very exclusive club. You know what I mean? I went, and the last time I did an audition was I got called in for Family Guy to play the wife on Family Guy, which I think was about the only character that the creator of Family Guy was not playing. But it was, you'd go to an audition and you'd be sitting there with all these TV stars, movie people. And it's like, you became like, why do you want to do animation? Why?
Do you think something's been lost with those changes?
You know, what was lost in a way is the animated characters greatly resemble the personas of the people playing them. So in other words, if Eddie Murphy's playing something, the animated character has a very Eddie Murphy persona. It's not a matter of creating the persona to fit the drawing anymore, but creating the drawing to fit who's playing them. For instance, Shrek. You know, I mean, it's not that he looks like, you know, Mike, what's his name, but it's just a different process, I think. And they realize, and it's caused the revival of a second golden age of animation, because they realize that, okay, they're not going to necessarily go see Finding Nemo with somebody one has never heard of in the movie. They will go see Finding Nemo if Ellen DeGeneres is in it, or Albert Brooks is in it, or any number of big stars are in it. You know what I mean? You have Cameron Diaz, you have all these various people. And so it's built around
stifling
that.
The possibility of new people and new talent coming through, isn't it? That's the thing.
I thought so. I mean, right now I think a lot of new talent is gravitating toward games. And, you know, some of the studios, like Pixar, they use big stars for their main roles. And they fill a lot of those roles, too, with some of the producers and the animators are also actors. And some of the writers are actors. Brad Bird, who is the director of a lot of those big Pixar animated films, also does voices. So he's in his own films. That's good. But a lot of the character voices and the people that I worked with have gone on to do stuff like, you know, what's the car theft, you know, all those video games.
Yeah.
They're like a big deal.
The other thing you haven't got in America, which we've still got a little bit of here, is that we still have a reasonably large sort of radio drama and comedy sort of sector, certainly through the BBC.
Yes.
That doesn't exist in the same way in America, does it?
No. People do podcasts, some individuals. A lot of the people I know that I worked with do a lot of video games. They go to the comic cons, the conventions. I was approached recently by, I met a guy in Sonoma, and I live about 50 miles north of San Francisco. And I live in the very small town where the founder of Pixar lives. All the Pixar people live in Sonoma. There's a lot of people here. So one of my neighbors, it turns out, was one of the producers of a bunch of these Pixar movies. And he said, "Oh my God, Rosemary, you live in Sonoma." So we got together, we had coffee. I mean, he grew up watching Hong Kong Fooey. He's a young guy. And now he has gone with a number of guys from Lucasfilm, and they have a very successful gaming company. And so he's talked to me about, would I like to go back and do some game voices. So I thought, okay, that's fun. I'd like to do that. That would really be you know, it would be fun.
Looking back finally then at Hong Kong Phooey, though, I'm just looking through the people who are involved in it. It looks as though you're the only one left.
Well, yeah. I'm the last surviving member because I was also a kid when I was doing it. They were all older than me. But yes, I'm the one that's left.
What would you say then? Let's go turn full circle back to Hong Kong Phooey. What would you say finally then? Would your overriding memory of working with people like Scatman Crothers and other people at that time in Hong Kong Phooey?
Well, you know, I did not know. I know who Joey Ross was because I had seen him on Sergeant Bilko, American television show, when I was like five. I knew who, I didn't know who Scatman was. I had no idea of how famous Scatman was. Dawes Butler, I learned later, had a great history in the golden age of radio here in the United States. But I did not understand what a big deal Scatman was until Stanley Kubrick made The Shining. And then I thought, oh my God, what we used to do on breaks from recording is we would sort of go out into the parking lot of Hanna-Barbera and Scatman would play his ukulele and sort of sing and dance around. And Joey Ross would tell absolutely filthy, filthy, filthy jokes, which came from his days, I learned, in burlesque. And I don't mean high class burlesque. I mean, I don't know where he was working, but he would do stuff. And I mean, I would go, oh my God, you know, so that's all I knew.
Do you remember any of the particular storylines? I mean, you say that it was all very bizarre setup, but can you remember any of the storylines?
I remember there were bank robbers. There probably were several bank robbers. What I do is I get the Hong Kong Phooey plots mixed up with Tom and Jerry. So all I remember is masked guys in striped shirts. And that's what I really remember. And I remember just, you know, everything had to sound like I was just crazy in love with Hong Kong.
Kathy, thank you very much indeed for talking to me. Really, really good. Really nice to hear Rosemary again. It'd be nice to have Rosemary revived at some point in the future. I think it'd be great to have Hong Kong Phooey back. It was certainly part of my childhood in the 1970s, and I'm amazed that there was so few episodes, because for me it seemed to go on forever.
Hong Kong Phooey, number one super guy, Hong Kong Phooey. Yeah, that's in my head now for the rest of the day. Thank you very much, Ashley. Bye-bye.
Distinct Nostalgia is produced by MIM, and we've some real gems to come in the coming weeks to keep you entertained during these difficult times as we all self-isolate to stay healthy. And the good news is that from today, you can get all your Distinct Nostalgia programmes all in one place by going to distinctnostalgia.com. Don't forget to keep in touch on Twitter at distinct_by_MIM or send us your ideas to info@madeinmanchester.tv. Bye for now.
Distinct Nostalgia is brought to you in partnership with The Life Rooms and the Merseycare NHS Foundation Trust. We've lots of activities for you to do at home at liferooms.org. Staying well, staying home.